Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 360th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and a professor at the University of Alberta.
And for those of you who have been following along the play sheet, we are now at episode... the third episode of dealing with issues to do with agitation and dementia. And the very first podcast that we did on this talked about the use of antipsychotics, suggesting that probably 1 in 10 might get a, you know, at least a maybe measurable clinical benefit, but again, a number of harms. And then we went over many medications, including the benzodiazepines and the antidepressants in the second episode of this trilogy. And it was quite depressing, if I remember correctly.
Even though antidepressants were being used.
Yes, it's sad. And they don't have a lot of effect. And you know, we're making a bit of light of agitation and dementia because it is a major issue for many people.
Oh, God. Yeah, and it's very traumatic.
Right? It's very traumatic.
These are loved ones that are behaving so abnormally for them. It is a very sad condition, and we have so little that we can do well. But we're gonna get into the, hopefully some better approaches that are not drug related.
Yeah. So why don't you lead us through them? Because there's only a few dozen.
Yeah. So there's tons of ways that this has been looked at, and it's a bit overwhelming, really. Massage therapy, light therapy, where you get bright light shining in people's faces, basically. Music and dance therapy alone. Multisensory stimulation therapy, transcutaneous electric nerve stimulation. I just can't imagine how someone thought the best way to calm someone down who's agitated is to give them shocks. I'm not quite sure how that makes sense. But exercise therapy, pet therapy, cognitive stimulation, I've mentioned a bit of, reminiscence therapy, it just goes on and on. And there's tons of them. And we're going to talk about some of them and some of the ones that maybe have more effect, like dementia care mapping and patient-centered care within agitation and dementia. So
lead us through, because I just listen. You're right. I mean, some of the, like, can you imagine shining a bright light into someone's eyes who's agitated? I mean,
it's kind of like it's. I saw an excellent headline that knife fight broke out at anger management class.
Yeah.
Again, not a nice thing to laugh at, I guess, but if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. Mm. Okay, so here's some of the things that may actually have a little benefit. We'll list them and then get into them more. Activities that are group or individual activities, and this includes groups that, like, things like cooking classes, mm-hmm, that you take with that these kind of, and I think you'd have to only be mildly agitated to be able to sit through a cooking class with hot oil. But obviously you would modify what kind of things you were doing to minimize risk. Music therapy, sensory interventions. Those are things like where you're laying on of hands, like touch therapy, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Working through paid caregivers for patient-centered care and communication skills. So what this is people with specific skill sets that go into nursing care homes and long-term care facilities, that kind of thing, and communicate with the agitated patients in a very specific and trained manner, and then actually training the staff and helping them learn some of the skills and how to communicate and reach out to agitated elders. There's dementia care mapping, which kind of goes along with behavioral management. And what you're doing in this case is you're kind of watching, again, you're hiring someone with a specific skill set who will come in and take kind of a detailed exam of each individual patient over time and see the things that kind of are their triggers and things that lead them down a dangerous path into escalating agitation, and then try and address those individual triggers for that person. So you're mapping out kind of this cycle of a day for them, and what are the triggers, what are the things that make them more agitated, and then trying to modify that environment and modify their behavior through that. So those are the six things that we'll go over. The things that we're not going to talk about because there's just inadequate or unclear evidence is pet therapy and some others, and then things like that we know don't work, like aromatherapy, mm-hmm. which is interesting because it was one of the things that was promoted originally as potentially working, but the effects were small even then. And you can imagine some of them were again, it's just kind of, you got to laugh. The idea of lighting aroma candles around the long-term care facilities, and you're talking about agitated people having lit candles. It's just a recipe for disaster. So yeah. There's obviously lots of other ways to do it, but that was one of the ones considered.
But like you said, they have been studied in, or at least they've attempted. It's not just we're going, oh, it just doesn't work. There is actually evidence against them.
Yeah, so this was early research, and they pooled these kind of sensory aromatherapy mm-hmm. methods, gave a large change in standard mean difference around 1.1, which is, for those of you who know standard mean difference, and if Cohen was correct, we would believe that that is a very large change mm-hmm. in behavior. This is an RCT, but Cochrane looked at it as well, 7 RCTs with 430 patients or so, and the smell was lavender that was used. So this is one of the interesting nuances of these. As you start to look at these, it gets down to this level of detail. Like not only what are we using sensory stimulation in aromatherapy, but what type of aromatherapy is being used, and again, how is it delivered, and mm-hmm. That varies, but this is mostly lavender, James. So if you're wondering, and I know you were, there are 5 RCTs that use 3 agitation scales, and the results were all equivocal. Adverse events were equal between groups. There was an HTA, a health technology assessment review of 6 RCTs with 276 patients. And they said there was good evidence from high quality studies that there's no effect. Yeah. So aromatherapy does not work. I think we can say mm-hmm. that. Relatively clearly. Let's look at pet therapy. This is an HTA, again, health technology assessment of 3 studies, non-randomized with 26 participants total in 3 studies. And there was no statistical difference in agitation. If you look at 10 studies, including 3 case controls and 7 time series, they suggest maybe some help, but really unclear. So the research is completely inadequate. Simulated presence, that's where you're actually having it so that they think that someone's in the room with them, that's a caregiver or a family member. And so things like even bringing in things that smell like home, that mm-hmm. seem like home, all of these kind of things. This is 3 RCTs of 144 patients. And again, the bottom line answer is we just have no idea.
Yeah. And one thing, one of the reasons that one of the pet therapies didn't work, they actually used a pet rhinoceros.
Yeah.
And for some reason.
The leash was tight. Yeah. I think the error there was it was a tight leash, and it was one of those things you see for smaller pets where the animals can kind of run out a bit on it. Mm-hmm. And they had a 150 meter run on the line. It's probably a little more. You probably wanted to rein that guy in just a tiny bit more.
Yeah. And it's why you have to actually look in detail about what was studied.
Yeah, the alternative was a pit viper, and they decided to go with the rhino. They just felt it was more cuddly.
Yeah, and weird that they found no difference between that and a rhinoceros. It was, yeah, anyway.
That was the control arm. Yeah, some of what you've just heard may or may not be real. I'll leave it up to you. My kids play at school is 2 truths and a lie, so you've just gotten guess which one was the fib. Okay, so non-pharmacal things that likely work. So activities like cooking classes, the effect size there, again, these are in standard mean differences, which are difficult at best to interpret, but between 0.6 and 0.8, which would be moderate to large effect. And that was studied in 8 RCTs with just shy of 600 people, and then some lower level studies. Music therapy, with which just follows a certain protocol of how they play the music and what music is played and all sorts of things. That had a 0.8 to 0.5 standard mean difference, 6 RCTs and just over 300 patients, and some lower level studies. Sensory interventions, that's kind of the laying on of hands, that kind of thing. That was up 1.3 to 0.6. And again, that was 7 RCTs. Working through paid caregivers. So this is where we're getting into now, like specifically trained people to deal with this. 950 patients studied with some really big effect sizes, 1.8 to 0.3. And dementia care map, 2 RCTs. With 1.4 to 0.6. So if you were to guess where the money was, it would be through these more intensive interventions with specific training.
Yeah. And certainly, I was going to say, these results certainly look a lot more, the effect sizes are larger than what you would see with pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And a lot of them, it's very hard to tease out what's working. So, for example, in the activities session, it might include music that you dance to, as well as some group activities. So there's a lot of overlap. It reminds me a bit of the research around chiropractic care. So even when the studies are good, it's hard to sort out what's actually working because they pile in different interventions into one and then compare it to quite dissimilar things in the control group.
Yes. So, and none of these can be blinded. And when you're talking about a subjective endpoint, you've got to take that into account as well. So, you know, it's wonderful that these things are studied because, you know, these are the sorts of things that we need to have studied.
Yeah, exactly. So these are looking at activities. And again, this was like cooking classes, but other things would include a storytelling class. Again, some music involved, Montessori type activities. And I'm not even sure what that really is, but that was what was defined. But mostly cooking classes. So, and they reduce emergent agitation and decrease the symptoms of agitation in those who are already agitated. Individualized activities did not appear to make any more difference than group activities. And there was little evidence for those who were severely agitated or not in care homes. So I think that's just an important thing to remember, that yes, these work, but patients who are really, really agitated and distressed, you're not going to calm them down by teaching them how to make toast. It's going to take more than that. But one of the things, it doesn't persist after the interventions, the behavior starts to return. So it really does require consistent kind of work with them. And then let's move on to kind of music type therapy. So this can, you know, it's not just sitting and listening, it's other things. And that's one of the keys here. So there's, to give an example, a couple of them were things like 5 or more sessions where it included a warm up, which was a familiar song to these elderly patients, then kind of an active listening, and then joining in where they're singing along with them, or for those who want to like tap on percussion instruments or what have you. And these were done at least 2 times a week for 6 weeks or more. And so there's kind of a protocol to these. It's not just simply sitting and listening to, you know, some Bach or something like that. It's a little bit more intensive and well thought out. So what did they find? Well, the HCA was 6 RCTs and 300 patients. If you follow these kind of protocols, it did was effective in reducing emergent agitation and decreasing symptomatic agitation, but not really long-term usefulness wasn't there, because when you withdraw these things, things go back to normal. And again, no evidence in severe agitation. When Cochrane looked at it with 16 RCTs and 600 patients, they looked at emotional well-being and kind of quality of life, and that did improve, although not statistically significantly, by a small amount, a standard mean difference of 0.3. Behavior problems improved, again, not statistically significantly, but did show a directional improvement, and same with agitation and aggression. But again, the effect there was very small, and not statistically significant. And there's been two other studies that also, these are RCTs that were done in 2017 that were generally positive as well. So, you know, there is some doubt in how good these are at really reducing agitation, but they seem to have a positive effect, even though it is small. And they're certainly not too complex to add into a long-term care facility. So it's something that might be worthwhile trying, even though the effect will be small.
And probably minimal sort of side effects. I mean, other than the potential cost associated with doing it, which we can talk about, but that, you know, you're not going to get, well, I was going to say movement disorders, but you know, if they're dancing, it may be hard to tell.
mine often looks.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It looks like a movement disorder.
Yeah. But it's, you know, so this is where it does get very tricky, is that the evidence will never be as solid for these sorts of things. But there are, so that's music, but there are other things like sensory stuff, which again requires a lot of human intervention.
Right. So this is like therapeutic touch, massage, acupressure, snozzolin, which I'm not even sure, but it's a specific type of behavioral intervention, a sensory intervention, and then bathing with music. All sorts of things have been tried. It's fascinating how many things have been tried. Seven RCTs with 500 patients. None are, and as you kind of mentioned, James, for most of these things, you're not going to see like, you know, you're not going to go into a war or, you know, a facility that has 120 patients in it and 60 or have some level of agitation and you completely resolve it in the long-term care. You're just not going to see that, which is unfortunate, but that's just the manner of it. So what can you expect? Well, this has some standard mean differences that are a little bit more impressive, of 0.6 to 1.3. And again, reduce emergent behavior, reduce symptomatic agitation. And this one even had some effect on severe agitation. Again, only while the intervention was going on or during that time frame, but once it's withdrawn, it kind of rebounds. Therapeutic touch, which we've talked about a number of times on the podcast, this is the kind of aligning of energies. That did not work. It didn't have any added advantages, but things like acupressure, massage, these kind of things did have a little bit of advantage. Cochrane looked at it with seven possible RCTs, but used only two and said overall it had too little evidence to say. But maybe an effect here, not clear how long it's sustained after the intervention occurs, but perhaps a small improvement, which again, I think, balanced by what you just mentioned, James, the amount of cost associated with the human component of needing to perform these. Now we're getting into the stuff that probably actually, you know, might have some effectiveness or more likely to have effectiveness. And this is patient-centered care. And it's one of the few that show kind of more consistent evidence and often has higher quality studies and a persistent effect even up to 20 weeks. So what they take in these cases are kind of trained paid caregivers who come in. So this can't be like a family member. This requires people with a specific skill set that are very skilled in communicating with elderly demented patients who are agitated and kind of good at patient-centered care. And this has been shown to reduce symptomatic and severe aggression both immediately and up to 6 months in duration in care home settings. And it helps also prevent emergent depression emergent agitation in those who are at risk. So really, you know, pretty impressive. But again, this is where we're not tangling it in this case with, you know, is it bath or the music or the massage or these are often entangled with dementia care maps and kind of behavioral interventions, which are, again, much more costly and time consuming. So although patient centered care, as this is defined, does seem to have good benefits, it's going to be quite expensive to intervene pretty expensive to intervene at a large level.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have known the difference between that and dementia care mapping. I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, I actually, having read them a number of times, have a really hard time determining it. And really, to my way of thinking, it's a lot of similar things mm-hmm. overlapping. And I couldn't, in the RCTs, I couldn't say clearly that this was dementia care map alone.
Yeah.
It had to have components of that patient-centered care as well. So let's look at this. In fact, even though many of the studies kind of separate them out, I pool dementia care mapping and communication behavior management as the same kind of thing. And there were two HCAs here. And what they say is there's some evidence that dementia care mapping is effective and good for even 4 months. At reducing severe agitation. So this is where we talked about before how activities like cooking classes and stuff may work with mild. Dementia care mapping is best with the more severely agitated. And some preliminary evidence that training caregivers on behavioral management reduces agitation. So these things likely work. How well do they work? Well, there's Cochrane looked at four RCTs. With 4,337 residents, and they looked at complex tools with education, and do they reduce antipsychotic use? So this is a little bit different. This is now just trying to get people off antipsychotics, and what they found was they reported antipsychotic use over 100 days, and they rent for anywhere from 6 months to 3 months. And we're kind of looking at numbers in the treatment arms where they're aggressively trying to do things to reduce. This is not targeted at patients now. This is targeted at us prescribing antipsychotics. And we went down from anywhere from kind of 29 to 47 down to 33 to 23%. And the differences there are in the big studies. They were about 24% reduction in antipsychotic use all the way down to as little as 5%. And the control went from anywhere from 50 to 26 down to 25 to 42. And again, the numbers there for the absolute difference in reduction was 8 to 1%. So what does this mean? Well, at the best, aggressive interventions to reduce antipsychotic use in long-term care facilities reduces agitation by 4 to 16%. So not a big amount, James.
You mean that many more people getting off antipsychotics?
Yeah, like when you're really aggressively trying. It reminds me of interventions where we're desperately trying to get people to prescribe less antibiotics or those kind of things.
Yeah.
Because as a clinician, I know very well, I can find a reason to prescribe antibiotics mm-hmm. or to... You know, if I think an antipsychotic or drug is needed, I had a patient just yesterday who I recognize is on too many drugs. But when I went through, I could justify every one of them. And it's a bit of a trap. And I've told myself, well, we'll revisit it in two to three months when he's coming off. He's going to come off one of his drugs anyway. And I think mm-hmm. I can then get him off two others that are there for harm. So it's hard to reduce drug use in the elderly.
Oh no, for sure. And you know, and that's, you know, the again, if there's any way of just you know, cutting doses and stuff, so you know, completely stopping medications for a variety of reasons. One, they may be having an effect. The family may not want them to be stopped, and so on. So yeah, it's but at least there is some evidence that doing these sort of more complex ways of working with or dealing with the agitation has some sort of an effect.
Right. Yeah. So let's kind of sum up, because I think we've gone over a lot here, and there are tons of great ideas for the management of agitation in the elderly, but there's actually a very little good evidence to support non-drug measures. Not that we looked at the benzos last time and mm-hmm. the evidence for them is equally terrible mm-hmm. And incredibly inconsistent and that kind of thing. Simple interventions that possibly have some benefit are things like activities, and we've talked about types of activities, music therapy, but not just simply listening to music. This is where you're actually participating. You play a song at the beginning mm-hmm. to get people kind of interested in participating. Then you have some kind of sing-along components and participation, and then kind of a mellowing out period afterwards. Yeah. Sensory stimulation.
I was going to say, like, probably not rap.
Not gangster rap anyway.
No, yeah.
Some sensory stimulation as well that works, maybe things like acupressure and massage and that kind of thing. But sadly, there's a lot of uncertainty how well these work and the reliability of the evidence. And it's partly because it's a hard thing to study, hard thing to measure, and there's so much variability in the types of interventions between studies. Complex interventions like dementia care maps and trained patient-centered care providers, I think these probably do work. The trouble is they're quite complex. They need a lot of training, and they require a broader system level of commitment. So mm-hmm. it's not like, you know, you an impassioned GP or pharmacist who work in a long-term care facility at times can just come in and say, let's start this tomorrow.
I don't think it's
going to take, you know, a lot of work with administrators finding funding to support these and carving off additional resources, and then finding the places that actually provide this level of training and assistance. Yeah. So all of those sorts of, once you embark on it, it will be a long journey, but probably a rewarding one. Just a long journey,
and certainly a lot. And I don't mean this as a criticism necessarily, but certainly much more expensive than giving generic Valium or any generic antipsychotic, which are very, very inexpensive. And you know, this whole area is very, very tricky. And you know, you've done a really good job of putting it all together into the context of it. And you know, anytime you have a very difficult to treat condition, it is, you know, many, many people will study many, many different things because it's so frustrating and such a potential problem. And it's the whole concept, the whole thing is sad, actually, none of this stuff works very, very well.
I know, it's unfortunate that we don't have much. And you can see where these different study comes from. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's say you and I are working in a facility and Mr. Jones was quite agitated and a caregiver came in, or maybe one of the, you know, nursing staff took some extra time and provided a massage for Mr. Mm-hmm. Jones or played some music well, and we saw him calm down quite a bit. And then you and I say, wait a minute, what if we did this for everyone? Mm-hmm. And well, why don't we study it? And all of a sudden you've got a small study, you know, looking at this intervention because you've seen it work for a few people. And that's how I think a lot of these get started, with absolutely the best intention, grounded in some level of experience. But your experience and the study you generated is hard to pool with the next study, and you mm-hmm. maybe use different measurement tools. And so, you know, pretty soon it becomes this quagmire that's very hard to sort out as to what actually might be working and what might not. But I think the money here is on, you know, because of our resource limitations, is on the simple interventions that can be instituted for small groups of clients and patients, and then working towards administrative change to really support, you know, things like dementia care maps and patient-centered care.
And you can imagine this would be an area that would be fraught with unpublished studies, because you can imagine, you know, a small, you know, maybe one site decides to do a study and they study it and it shows nothing and they go, oh, I can't be bothered to publish it. And, you know, it's kind of any areas in psychiatry, if we will, and I'm, you know, putting this in that context, there's a possibility of a lot of negative or no effect trials that have been unpublished and we'll never know.
Yeah, I agree. That's a huge problem. And you know, when we looked at, I presented about pet therapy, for mm-hmm. example, you know, when you take three studies that are not randomized in 26 total participants, you're talking about 8 people per study. And mm-hmm. it's very easy to imagine studies like that never seeing the light of day, much less the randomized trials too. So I agree with you. We're getting a glimpse of the information out there, I think. And certainly the big trials or bigger trials where you're talking about randomizing, you know, 226 mm-hmm. patients or something like that, I think those will end up being published because journals would take those regardless of their findings.
No, exactly.
But
it's true. Sure. And then every, regardless of what any study shows of an average effect, it depends on how that individual responds. And so it's the whole tricky part of trying different things and seeing if there's any change and then reevaluating. But no, really good job, Mike. So, The course coming up is in Edmonton is, I'm sure, filling up. And so you need to, if you're interested in attending in live and in person, which you really should be, right, Mike? Because there's some really good looking presenters.
Yeah, absolutely, James. I'm not speaking of myself, of course. But yeah, that we have some. yeah, I think you asked for that to be included in the pamphlet for the, or the brochure for the actual conference.
Absolutely.
That you were the most attractive person at the conference.
Which is really sad.
Yeah.
If that's true. And if you even want more of us, you can come to the course in Vancouver, May 4th and 5th. Many tools for practices are coming out. I don't know if it's plural or not plural when we talk about tools for practice.
I don't even know how to plural it. Geeses,
yeah. So check those out. And there's links to the tools for practice on our website, therapeuticseducation.org. And I think the next few, we're going to start doing some new study stuff. So if you're interested in that, please pay attention. And so I think we'll leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.